my interview partner completely turned everything around and started the interview by telling me about his business, about his vision, about what he wanted to achieve. So very quickly, we ended up in a really engaged business conversation that lasted for 1.5 hours. So it never really was an interview. We were just discussing business challenges, new ideas, which was so inspirational, was really an amazing time. And I think also actually the most efficient way to understand how people think and if there could be a fit or an added value.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid. This is the show where we talk to and learn from some of the most disruptive executives and founders in their industries about what they do differently when it comes to uniquely identifying top talent. If this is your first episode, welcome. Please tell your friends. We're so glad to have you. If you're a longtime listener, we appreciate the support. Please, please, please subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to podcasts and give us a great rating. Today, we have a very special guest joining us from Europe. I'm joined today by Judith Kaltschmidt, the Chief Marketing Officer for Moët Hennessy, over Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. How are you doing, Judith?
Very well. Thank you very much. And you?
I'm doing great. Happy New Year to you. Did you do anything exciting for New Year?
We actually went skiing with friends in the mountains. So it was really lovely.
Moët or Hennessy popped at night?
Yes.
Or
Of course. Can't do without.
Can't do without. I'm so interested to talk to you. I'm fascinated by your company. I'm fascinated about all the branding and marketing that comes out of your company. So I'd like to start here. Let's start with the company and tell us a little bit about the scope of the role. And then I want to jump into why you came to Moët Hennessy in the first place.
Sure. No, so I'm responsible for the whole portfolio of Moët Hennessy. It's more than 20 amazing brands across lots of different categories. I'm sure you know some of the biggest names everybody knows is Moët Chandon, Veuve Clicquot, Dom Pérignon from the champagne side, as much as Hennessy, as the name implies, on the spirit side. So it's an extremely exciting business. One, because it's so diverse. If you really cover the whole portfolio, all of the categories. What I love is working with this incredibly emotional and historical brands. I mean, some of our brands are more than hundreds of years old. The rich storytelling we have, the craftsmanship, it's absolutely fascinating. And I really love as well about the business that we're so rooted in nature. I mean, ultimately, everything we produce is depending on the nature, how the harvest goes. So very, very different dynamics than what I was used to before. And what I think is also special is one of our key or the key mission is to craft exceptional experiences for consumers. That's where our brands and our products live, and really fostering an emotional connection. So beautiful place to be.
Yeah. So you worked for many, many years at Procter & Gamble. We're going to talk about that. Obviously, one of the most well-recognized brands in CPG. And it sounds like in terms of coming to Moët Hennessy, just the storytelling, the ability, it feels like what you could do with the brand and how you could take it to the next step was really a big draw for you. Was that because obviously it's great talent, it's a great company. I'm sure everything that comes with the role is exciting, but that sounds like one of the biggest draws for you. And as somebody that's a marketer, that sounds like something that is going to be a key for you in terms of wherever you go work. You know, maybe you could go work at ABC Lumber Company or something like that, but there's just something different about a brand and something that's so historical like Moët Hennessy to be part of that. Is that an accurate description of why you came?
No, for sure. I mean, the brands had the biggest draw, but also the people. Already in, you know, the hiring process, everybody I talked to is just fascinated, really, really nice. And it's still a key driver today. The passion of the people working in the business, incredible. A lot of them have been around for decades. So I'm still in awe every single day about their expertise and their knowledge. So I'm still scratching only on the surface after 5 years. Definitely people and brand, for sure.
I love that. So a lot of times when I close my eyes and I think about what it's like to work at a company with one of these iconic brands, you know, you're working with a portfolio of some of the most luxurious brands, historical brands in the world. You know, I know it's not, you don't show up to work in a ballroom gown and there's a butler there with a nice flute of champagne for you. Like, I can't imagine that's what the day-to-day is like, but I'm interested. I do want to hear about the culture of the company and how maybe it aligns with what the external brand is, maybe how sometimes it differs. And then, of course, I want to know, I mean, are there any really cool perks about working for a brand like Moët Hennessy?
No, I mean, for sure, as a company, as I said, it's really very much driven by the people, the passion they have, the knowledge they have. And the respect and the care for the brands, because, you know, something that's lived for 200 years, you'd better don't screw it up. So it's really, you know, the passion, the love for detail and craftsmanship and delivering the utmost quality is just the main principle, and nothing can be
that. Is that pervasive across the organization? Like, is everything done with the highest level of quality and attention to detail? Because that's what people think of when they think of Dom Perignon. That's what people think of with some of these higher level champagnes. Do you see that, like, in the way that the supply chain works, or finance, or, like, do you see those values personified across the organization?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And it starts with the product, where there are no compromises made in terms of quality. But then, of course, through everything you touch, you know, how the consumer experiences the brand, how things are executed, it's really the attention to detail and best-in-class execution that runs through. And it's a big mantra throughout everything we do.
I love that. Are there any, like, cool perks that you've gotten since you came to the job, or anything that might be exciting, events you've gone to or people you've met maybe?
No, for sure. It's the experiences that you participate in. I mean, the places you get to see, the moments, the events you get to share, people. It's amazing. And I think it's also, you know, what a lot of people love and put a lot of the passion in.
I love that. So prior to Moët Hennessy, you worked at Procter & Gamble, which we talked about. I mean, many people talk about that, especially from a marketing perspective, as like one of the greatest training grounds you can have. And it's obviously one of the biggest and most respected global brands. I'm interested because I always want to talk about people in their career journey. Like, talk to me about that 13 years and how it's made you the professional, the leader, the marketer that you are.
I mean, as you'd already said, main point, it's one of a kind marketing school. Really, P&G told me everything there is to know about brand management. And I will be forever grateful for that. I think it's not just the trainings and kind of almost the marketing university we go through. It's the day-to-day interaction with some of the smartest brand builders I've ever met, which is just so enriching. And, you know, this day-to-day learning that you can get. At the same time, what I really loved, and I also managed to capitalize on a lot, is the ability to work on so many different categories and businesses and regions, always in one company. Sometimes you just moved one floor and you were in a completely different business, learned completely new skills. So that's amazing. Also, me personally, I love to learn new things. It gives me a lot of satisfaction and buzz to, you know, build capabilities, getting to know new things. So for me, that was absolutely amazing. And then still today, what I tap in a lot is the network of P&G alumni that are kind of to be found in almost every business. So whenever there is a question, you will find someone you can reach out with who is super happy to talk to you and share their experience.
Yeah. Something I want to double down on that you talked about is like your ability or people's capability, right, to take on new things. And we'll talk about it on the hiring side in terms of when you hire people, do you see that potential and how do you try to foster that? But I'm really interested about it with yourself, because if you are rising into any level of a corporate organization, different brands, different countries, there's going to be some learning, right? There's going to be some adaptability. There's going to be some things that you need to pick up. And, you know, one of the things I was talking about with somebody earlier is this, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, stress, anxiety, imposter syndrome is a term you hear a lot. To me, to a degree, it's kind of a fallacy, because like if you're moving into any level of a new role or any new company, you're never going to be 100% prepared for what's coming, or you're going to have to learn. There's going to have to be some different things that come with that. Some people run to that. Some people run away from that. I'm interested about when you're taking on something new, as you've done all throughout your career, do you have a methodology that expedites your ability to consume and learn and apply much quickly that we can share with listeners who might be going something similar in their careers?
I'm not sure it's a methodology. I sometimes feel it's not really rocket science, but for me, it all starts with understanding. Like when you get into a new business, really try to understand all the basics. And I would always say start with your consumers. Get to understand your new consumers inside out. What are their needs? What are they looking for? Why are they buying your brands? Why are they not buying your brands? It's often the most revealing facts, you know, what's in their mind when they think about your brand. That already gives you such a rich and core understanding. And then, of course, talking to customers, what's on their mind, looking at what competition does, very revealing and very helpful, because, you know, there's a lot of smart people and smart brands out there, a lot to pick up. And generally, I'm very much a data person. So I always start by looking at data, but then also go and talk to people that have been around for a while, pick their brains, let them tell their stories. What have they learned? What works? What doesn't work? I think that gives you often a very good first understanding. And my experience is a bit coming with an outside point of view sometimes makes it easier to spot some top line trends on, you know, where the business may be heading or where opportunities can lie. If it's then about getting your hands on the business, I think it's a very fine line of also understanding a bit the unwritten rules and what's not on paper, the organization, how are decisions made, how are people working together, you know, getting that sense of how you can navigate that environment. Because for me, it's finding a balance between being very clear and respecting what works, what makes the business successful, but where you can maybe bring some fresh ideas in. Because often enough, it's a bit of a black and white, either everything's thrown out of the window or, you know, nothing is challenged. I think it's always the middle way that brings the success.
I love that. When you transitioned to Moët Hennessy after 13 years plus at Procter & Gamble, how soon did you feel acclimated? How soon did you feel like, okay, I got a good sense? Like, you're always learning, don't get me wrong, but how long did it take for you to feel integrated into the company and comfortable?
Really hard to say. I think for me, there is the area of business, getting kind of a good feel for the business, where the challenges lie. I think that often comes faster, but then getting into a new culture, getting to build your new network within the company to navigate, to actually get where you want to go and achieve what you want to do, get things done. I think that just takes a bit longer. And very clearly, I mean, coming from an American FMCG company into a French luxury company, I don't think there are two cultures that could be more different.
Unique, right.
To experience, yeah.
I love that. You know, when we go into a new opportunity from a professional perspective, you know, sometimes you're going in to support and maintain something that's already working. Sometimes you're going in to build something. Sometimes you're going into a turnaround situation. And you and I talked about how you really enjoy the challenge of a turnaround situation. Can you give us an example in your career where you've done that would help illustrate that and why you enjoy it so much?
I think, you know, specifically in my P&G time, I was kind of lucky to often work on businesses where there was really something to change, a disruption to bring, something to fix, if you want to say. And a very memorable experience was in my time on personal care for IMEA. So for our antibacterial brand, Pakistan was one of the global lead markets, a market, you know, not many people get to experience specifically when you're sitting in a regional global headquarter. And we're market leader forever, for years. But, you know, after a couple of years, we realized things started eroding, shares went down, brand fundamentals weakened. Of course, the business numbers also didn't come. So there was a clear need to understand what the heck was going on and what we needed to do. And yeah, so we kind of packed the core team and we went for 2 weeks to Pakistan. And together with the local team, was like a case study you would run at university. We turned literally every stone. We talked to consumers. We talked to distributors. We specifically analyzed what changed in the last year. What did we change, maybe unintentionally? And what effect did it have from the lineup, from the product, campaigns, communication? And what we did realize very quickly, it wasn't like one big thing that was wrong. I think it was a whole collection of little things that weren't perfect across almost every touch point, which of course is not the one fix easy solution. But because it was all hands on deck, everybody was there. We came back after 2 weeks with a clear action plan across all touch points. And we were lucky enough to have a top management that trusted us, that gave us the go ahead and gave us the freedom to just get it done and get it done with speed. And I think what was rewarding for the team is that within a year, we could really see the brand KPIs changing, share was back to growth, and the numbers came as well, top and bottom line. So yeah, it was a really, really great place to be.
Wow, what a fantastic story. What great insights. I really appreciate that. And that is like that is an amazing turnaround story. And now when you do, like we talked about that imposter syndrome earlier, when you do it once, it makes you feel more comfortable no matter what you're walking into, that your ability to analyze and dissect the situation and put together a good strategy and solution, that's got to have given you a lot of confidence in your career going forward too. So I'm thrilled that you shared that. Before we get to the hiring, I do want to have people learn a little bit more about Judith on the personal side. So I know you live in Switzerland. What do you do for fun? You mentioned skiing a little bit earlier. What do you do for your enjoyment? What are hobbies you may have?
Okay. I mean, as I have two kids, I have to say the time for hobbies is a bit more limited.
Sure. I got four. I got double the problem.
As we are really in the middle of the winter season, it's definitely skiing in winter, getting on the mountains. A bit less time the last years, but now, you know, it starts that you can go skiing with the kids. So that makes it much easier. So I'm super happy to get out more this year. And then, you know, to be honest, when I have little time left, I actually do enjoy meeting my friends.
Going out with your friends.
Catching up, having a nice glass of champagne or wine. Kind of can't go without if you work in that category.
Sure, so, of course. Yeah, you got to be your own best customer, right? At the end of the day, when it comes to skiing, it's like, how close is it for you to get on the slopes from where you live? Is it a quick jaunt, or you traditionally go further out, or?
No, it's less than an hour. Depends awesome. Where you want to go. Yeah, it's fantastic.
And you've been skiing your whole life?
No, when I was 4 or 5 years old, I think.
4 or 5 years old.
Actually change to snowboard in between, which I'm
a snowboarder.
Still doing, but it's been all my life, yeah.
Here's what's interesting. So when I grew up in the West Coast of the United States, I had a snowboard. I was snowboarding. During the winter, I'd go pretty religiously. I moved to Florida, and I don't know if you're familiar with our terrain or topography here, but certainly not a lot of hills or mountains to get to.
For sure not.
And so I've got four kids, from 6 to 13 years old. And I feel like I'm starting to run out of time to get them like on the slopes and bunny slopes and take these trips. So I'm going to have to do that in the next, 12 months or so. Do you have any advice for young kids that I'm sure your kids are pros at this point, but anything like in terms of like getting them up to speed to be able to take advantage of this sport that takes a little while to learn and you can get hurt? Is there any advice you have for me as I take my kids out?
I would say put them into lessons as soon as possible, because our experience is, they hate listening to the parents. They're much more open to listen and follow the guidance of other people. So, yeah, I mean, we've put our son with 4 years into ski school and let them do their magic. Let's see how far we get.
But I love that. Good for you.
Finding the right talent for your team doesn't have to be a struggle. Meet Aon Hire, the world's first hiring experience management platform designed to transform the way you hire. Powered by AI, Aon Hire takes the hassle out of every step in the process. From smart resume analysis to customized interview questions, it saves you time, money, and effort. Plus, with real-time insights from every interview, you can quickly identify top candidates, reduce turnover, and stay on budget. And forget about note-taking. Aon Hire takes care of that for you. Ready to revolutionize your hiring process? Visit aonhire.com and get started today.
Let's talk a little bit about hiring, because it sounds like throughout your career, you've hired many, many people. You've been involved in many different interview panels. I'm super interested to understand some of your philosophies or some of your success marks. Let's start there. What is a core hiring philosophy for somebody that you want to bring onto your team or into your organization?
I mean, as we touched on before, I truly believe in capabilities people bring, and that those capabilities can more or less be applied to any category, any business, or any brand. It's how people approach a business, how they analyze it, their strategic thinking they apply. So I've very rarely looked for specific category experience. It was really the exception. And actually, once I decide to go and hire externally, I'd love to bring in some fresh air, some new ideas, just some new thinking, because at the end, it's the mix in the team that does the magic.
So you don't get too overly concerned about necessarily only what the resume says. It's also about the person, the behaviors, their ability to adapt. And it sounds like that diversity of experience and thought is really, really important to you, because like you said, you came from a very unique and different company, but it sounds like that's been an advantage for you, because you see things maybe a little bit different than some of the people that might have been with the company much longer. Is that fair?
Yeah. No, I think it's really about the mix of new ideas. Of course, it's always good to have people that truly know the category, that carry, the specific business knowledge. But ultimately, when I look at CVs, of course, the CV somehow needs to give me a hint of what capabilities the people may have acquired over time. But I'm very little fussed about what brands, what category they've worked on.
Okay. Do you have, if I ask you about a memorable interview experience, maybe you were interviewing somebody or you were interviewing for a company, anything come to mind?
Yeah, maybe one of my most positive interviewing experience was actually not really an interview at the end. It started that my interview partner completely turned everything around and started the interview by telling me about his business, about his vision, about what he wanted to achieve. So very quickly, we ended up in a really engaged business conversation that lasted for 1.5 hours. So it never really was an interview. We were just discussing business challenges, new ideas, which was so inspirational, was really an amazing time. And I think also actually the most efficient way to understand how people think and if there could be a fit or an added value.
Yeah, I think the best interviews I've heard are the ones that are less about can you do the job and more about what would you do in the job, right? And you're almost projecting a little bit. And that gives you a much better sense of that person's success and capabilities. Now, there probably had to be some level of vetting prior to that interview to be able to be comfortable to start there. But I agree with you. Like if I'm talking to a leader that is talking to me about, I want to understand your vision. And then let's talk about what it would look like working together and where we can, you know, where my skills, my capabilities, my behaviors can stand out and help you achieve that vision in a lot of ways, right? So that's a really, really good insight and something for executives and leaders to think about, particularly at the senior level, right? How can you help somebody get a real clear picture of what to expect? Because I think you're going to have a lot higher chance of success if somebody's walking with a very, both good and bad, right? What they're walking into, right, in the interview. Do you have like a favorite question or many favorite questions that you like to ask in an interview that you think can be super insightful?
There is a question I ask very regularly. Now, I have to say I stole it from an interview I had personally a while ago, but I thought it was quite shaking it up. So I was like, okay, that's really interesting. No, I do like to ask people, what is the reason why I should not hire them? Hmm. Because it's a bit turning it around and I have zero expectation, you know, on a specific answer, but I love to get a sense on the awareness people have, not only what they can bring to the business, but also where they may have to stretch themselves to succeed in the role. So yeah, it's always a bit of a surprise.
And, I was going to say, I'm sure there's a pause most of the time as the person thinks of their strategy. What are you looking for in the answer? You're looking for somebody that's self-aware? Are you looking through potential issues that you know you can work through or maybe that you complement? What would be like a good answer?
I think it's a mix of things. So first and foremost, are the people self-aware of where they're very clearly will have an easy way in versus maybe what are the territories they have to learn on? Because I believe, you know, you can easily cover areas and learn, but you need to be aware where it is, let's say.
Makes total sense. What about candidate experience? I'm just a lunkhead over here, but I think if I was coming to interview at Moët Hennessy, particularly if I was coming to the regional corporate headquarters, I'd have an expectation of like walking into the office and what the interview process would be like. How do you create a unique candidate experience in the company that gives people a sense of what they'll be walking into? And it might be just the questions you ask or the things you do, but are there any like tangible things that maybe out during the process, people get a sense of what it's like to work there?
I mean, I have to say the last years have been more difficult because a lot of hiring has happened online. Mm. It's just been maybe in the last couple of years that we try to have the last step of interview then physical in the office. I think really COVID has moved a lot more online than than what it used to be.
That's what our software does. Our software analyzes and guides you and co-pilots you through virtual interviews, right? We're working on the on-site interview and how we can get that same capability. But that's because 90 to 95% of interviews have all moved into not even phone anymore, video and virtual. So,
and it starts with the basics. Be in time, be focused, don't play around, multitask. You know, I mean, some of the worst experiences when you see people are actually messaging during the discussion because on Zoom, you know, it's much easier to do than when you're sitting in a room. Sure. So it's just the basic courtesy of showing interest in the person as a professional, but also, you know, personally and privately. And, you know, at the end, you need to convince them as well that you're the best employer for them, specifically if you want to get the good talent. So, you know, you should show up on your best behavior and be interested, be friendly, just engage with them in a genuine way. And the objective should always be that you want them to succeed in the interview.
The best interviewers I know look at it as a 50-50, you know, type decision, right? They're interviewing you, you're interviewing them, right? And it's hopefully, it's not just about the company making the right decision, it's about the candidate making the right decision too. And so you have to really kind of, and it's not an easy situation. Sometimes you have three or four interviews, maybe it might be 30 minutes to an hour. You got to get pretty deep and really understand somebody and make sure that you're not just getting the painted on picture either, right? You can really get kind of to the depths of it. That end, when you miss, when you don't make the right hire, and it happens to all of us, do you look back and see a theme that maybe stands out to you, or maybe something that, you're something you've had to learn over time that you need to worry about this bias or something like that?
I think honestly, when things went wrong, it was mostly about attitude, because it's not always easy to spot in a conversation. And it always reminds me, and unfortunately, it's also my experience, what one of my mentors always said is that you can coach everything but attitude. And that's been proven true also in my experience. Yeah, because at the end, attitude is how they look at the business, what they're willing to bring, but also it is often reflected in the collaboration, how people work with their colleagues and their other people. So yeah, that's for me, in my opinion, the toughest to spot just by a 45-minute conversation.
Yeah, what is something that maybe is the most frustrating for you, either as an interviewer or somebody who's interviewed for roles in the past, in terms of the hiring process, the interview process? Like, if you could, you know, clip your fingers and have something change, is there anything about it that you see frustrations in the process that you'd like to see improved over time?
On the process of
interviews? Yeah, just in terms of hiring or interviews in general.
I really think is try to be concise and short. If interview processes drag on from interview to interview and there's always another thing to do, usually we try to keep it at 3 interviews. You have a start off kickoff interview with HR and the business partner together, because I don't like splitting up HR and business. I'd always go in together. Then depending on the job, I would give people a case study, not for the sake of the real result or recommendation, but I love to see how people go at a task, how people look at the business, and what conclusions they drive based on the data. And usually the last one, it's a bit more a final check. And often then, if possible, physically, you know, to get a bit more the personal vibes. But I don't think more than 3 steps are really necessary.
Wow, I love that. Now, I advise our customers and our clients on the rule of 4, but I love it. I think, you know, having a long extended process, I think there's diminishing returns. And I think people sometimes mistake activity for productivity, I guess is what I'd say. Like, you have like these 10 different interviews and we're just going to be so diligent, but there's a couple problems with that. Sometimes more information, right, can really confuse and lead to worse decisions. But even more importantly, if you really want to get top talent, putting them through the ringer like that gives them an idea of what your culture is, what you value. And a lot of times you're going to lose great people in that funnel. Like, the enemy of great hiring is extended time. And so I love that you have a very, very, bring the business and HR together in that first interview, get a case study, get a use case that's going to help you understand them, and then do that final check to cover everything else off. I don't know, maybe I'll make it the rule of 3 going forward. I really like that. I'm sure the candidates really appreciate it too. So good stuff.
Yeah. Now, we do have only 3 steps, but sometimes there's some weeks in between when business gets in the way. So don't want to overpromise, but yeah, we try to keep it short.
I love it. Let's end on the hiring questions on a happy note. If I ask you about the best hire you've ever made, does somebody come to mind?
Yes.
Okay, you don't need to name names, but what I'm interested in is, did you know, I don't want to offend anybody, because everyone right now is listening to this and like, oh, Judith's talking about me. But did you know in the interview that this was going to be that successful of a hire, or was it something that took time?
No, I think it's pretty obvious. I mean, you do have the candidates where you just, one, it clicks, you feel they fit in, they do say the right things, you know, they showcase the right thinking. I think it's often very, very obvious when someone really fits.
Love that. All right. I want to learn a little bit more about maybe some day in the life stuff. So let's ask this. What are you working on right now that you're really excited about that you can share with us?
I think at the moment, we're really finalizing the plans for 2025. And you know, it's a very dynamic, very disruptive moment. So we keep adjusting them. It keeps us up on our toes. But because it's quite an economically challenging time, I think it forces us to look at things differently. Resources are tight. You cannot just do the easy way out. So it's challenging, but I think it's very interesting because you have to come from a different angle to make it work. And it will force a lot of agility as well in the upcoming weeks and months to really react quickly and fast. So I think that's why that's the exciting part at the moment.
Yeah, I hope this isn't too provocative, but listen, I'm somebody that, you know, I enjoy a good glass of wine with my wife. I enjoy a great whiskey with a friend. I will celebrate with a glass of champagne. I did on New Year's myself, was Moet. But I do see that in America in particular, it feels like there's like this like push on health and these different things and cutting back on alcohol or cutting out alcohol together. I'm interested, do you see that in Europe as well? Or what are you seeing in terms of trends? And is there anything you're doing for that, against that? Or is that help me understand that from a European perspective in particular, because I know that's your area of concentration.
Yeah. I mean, in general, we are always promoting, you know, really healthy management
responsible
drinking. It's never about the quantity, let's say. Funnily, the trend to more healthy lifestyle, you know, drinking less often, plays a bit in our favor because we have so high quality products that people, when they have the moment to enjoy a product or a drink, there's a higher chance they really look for the quality and go more premium. So I think it's not necessarily contradicting this trend. So ultimately, you know, we have the brands that you would look out for if you want to have a special moment. And if those moments become less often, you want to get something good on the table. So really plays in our favor. But then of course, also we've just, you know, also looking into an acquired partnership with a non-alcoholic brand. So it's for sure something we're looking out for. And it's going to be interesting to see specifically the younger generation is on a very different trajectory. Yeah.
So listen, I'm gonna get on my soapbox a little bit here because I've seen people and I know a lot of founders and I know a lot of people who are, you know, it's dry January for a lot of people right now. And here's what I would say, okay? Everything, like a lot of people are saying, well, I read somebody said that the other day, there's no benefit to alcohol whatsoever. And I would push back on that. And here's what I would say. Many of the best times I can remember with family, with friends are over, you know, enjoying a drink or two, being moderate. It's the excessiveness that causes a problem. Almost everything we do in this life has some sort of detriment to our body, our mind, our spirituality, whatever it may be. And anything in excess is a really bad thing. Me sitting at my desk and working all the time is really bad for my mental health and physical health if I'm doing it in excess. And so I want to push back a little bit on this moment on people like, and you know what, it's one of these things that people like want to like talk about. And it's like the people that say they run a marathon and they're it's like, listen, I get it. You're doing it. That's your personal decision. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing if somebody wants to enjoy themselves from time to time. And of course, as they do it responsibly and in moderation, you know, for me, that's something that has been something that as I look back at some of the fondest memories of my life, there has been some level of enjoying a drink or two. So I'm just going to put that out there as my message, the counterpoint to what's out there in the world, which is very different than, say, a cigarette or something like that. There's not a lot of benefit or things like that. I could say there's definitely a big health concern with that, even in moderation. But I don't see it the same for the industry that you're in or you know, anything like that. So I just wanted to put that out there because, you know, we're hearing a lot of it here and I want to make sure I push back a little bit. Let me ask you a question. In terms of great books you might have read recently or maybe content, anything you'd share with our listeners that they should pick up and read or watch?
I mean, actually, I've just recently come back to a book I've read several years ago, but was something I picked up with my team and we were discussing is still a big fan of Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow.
Oh, Dale
as a marketer.
Amazing.
So insightful and so good to have top of mind when you're really looking about how to break through the clutter, how you can really, you know, actually get in front of the eyes and in the mind of consumers. So yeah, for me, it's an all-time classic.
Yeah, the lower mind, the higher mind, the way that we make decisions. You know what the interesting thing about, I read it recently again too. And the thing that stands out to me about it is such a dense, easy read. So like, it doesn't like mince words or like goes through a lot of different studies and talks in very, you know, academic terms in a lot of the book. And yet never is do I feel like it's a chore to get through. And that's just so impactful. Another book like that is High Output Management, which I highly recommend. It's a book that's really informed a lot of my management strategy and capability. Again, very dense information in there, but doesn't wear you down and it makes it an easy read. So that's a great recommendation. I personally love that book. If I had to ask you, what's some advice that you give your 20-year-old self that you didn't know then, but that you know now, what would you say?
I'd say start networking and connecting with people from the start of your career. And I think everybody always gets told, but my own experience has been specifically for the first part of my career, you work a lot, you're in your hamster wheel, and you know, it takes time staying connected to people, but it's a big mistake not to do that because it brings you so much. You can learn from people. You get inspiration, specifically when it's outside of your company and an industry. And out of that network, you know, find some important mentors, some people you can fall back to and you can approach when you have questions, when you have maybe a more meaningful conversation about your career or if you just need help. So building that network from the beginning, I give as the biggest advice.
I think that's fantastic advice. I think the eighth wonder of the world is, or ninth wonder of the world is compound interest. I tell people that networking is a compound interest phenomenon. The more that you put yourself out there, put yourself in the right communities of all different, you know, types and industries and reasons, right? It always comes back and pays off tenfold, right? The conversation you had here that gave you a brilliant insight, the person you met here that led to a big deal, the friend you made that ended up being one of your best customers. If you go in with the intent to just be curious and learn and build a real relationship, you're going to find that the output of that is just so strong. And it just, you know, as I've, you know, there was a time where I was so focused on my work and I was so ingrained in my, you know, I have the four kids I mentioned earlier. I have, you know, two companies I'm running, and you get so ingrained in everything you're doing on the day-to-day basis that I kind of had a no new friends mentality for a few years, and it was a mistake. And I fixed it about 5-6 years ago. And the compound interest of growing my network and building these relationships, doing a podcast like this, has just been exponential for my growth, my learning, and for our company. So I totally agree. I think that is fantastic advice, Judith. All right, we're going to end here. We're going to do a little bit of a lightning round, okay?
Fantastic.
You grew up in Germany, moving to Switzerland, I think, fairly recently. When did you move?
No, I've moved 2008.
2008, okay. So it's been a while. Yeah.
Quite a while.
I am half Indian, half German. My dad is from Essen, Germany. I have pictures of me in Lederhosen as a kid. I want to ask you a little bit about Germany. So my first question for you would be, what is your favorite German meal?
Spätzle.
What's that?
German cuisine is very regional. It's sure. From my home region, Swabian. It's a bit like homemade little pasta.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So say it again, because I might want to order it next time I go to a German restaurant.
Spätzle.
Spätzle.
Or Kässpätzle, which means with cheese on top.
With cheese. I'm thinking of my Oma right now and all the German meals she used to make me. That's amazing. What is a place, if somebody was visiting Germany for the first time, you tell them to go visit?
Ooh, that's difficult. Germany is so different. And also, you know, when you look at just from a metropole point of view, so decentralized. Every city is really different, but surely a no-miss is Berlin. Such a melting pot, super interesting, lots going on culturally. Munich, about the biggest difference you can have. You get more the cultural stuff if you can ever enjoy the Oktoberfest, would highly recommend. And then surely going to the north, Hamburg, very different, you know, bit different people, let's say, but also super beautiful, great nightlife. So maybe these are the three cities I'd recommend.
The three cities. Okay. Berlin, Munich, and Hamburg. Okay, yeah. Good. What's your favorite German export? Like product, car, whatever it may be that we know nationally.
Wine, beer, I would say.
Beer? Okay, which beer in particular?
Again, we have almost every town has an own beer and an own brewery. And
is there like a lot big of international times
those brewery? Local beers are
the locals
are the best. So okay. Yeah, don't really have a fixed one.
Mercedes or BMW?
Mercedes. I'm from close to Stuttgart. So
okay, so
the heart will always be for Mercedes.
Sure. Last one. Do you have a favorite German footballer?
Müller.
Yes. Love Thomas Müller. So my dad, when I was, I've gotten into soccer a lot more recently over the last 10 years, obviously cheer for the US team. Not very good. I cheer for Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp. That's my favorite German export.
Yes.
He did a lot for my club. But I grew up and I remember, I'm forgetting the year it was, but when they won the World Cup, my dad is like a humongous German football fan. And I remember Michael Ballack was a player that I grew up
yeah,
really
Yeah, it was a big figurehead at the time.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Awesome. Judith, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate you sharing.
Lovely. Thank you for having me.
Of course. If I'm ever in Switzerland, I'm going to give you a call and maybe we can hit the slopes.
For sure. I expect it.
All right. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Bye.